Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of a late edition, I've got to say, yep. of the Pewter Nation podcast. My name is Trevor Sikkema. With me, Mr. Scott Reynolds. Mark Cook is not with us today. He's here with us in spirit. He didn't die.
Well, That's true.
We just said the in spirit thing.
He's not even in a coma either. He's alive and well.
He is. He just couldn't make it to this podcast. But that's unfortunate for him because this might be the most positive Buccaneers podcast that we have recorded since I've been a member of PewterReport.com.
That's true.
Because this team is coming off of, boy, I really did not think that I was going to say this, a 1-0 start to their season after beating the New Orleans Saints 48-40. Scott, your initial thought, I know you've written about it plenty, but just for the podcast's sake, your initial thoughts.
I called it.
Oh my gosh. Get out of here.
And listen, I had a chance, Trevor, because our predictions came out on Saturday. I had a chance to change the pick when I learned that Brent Grimes wasn't going to play in the game. And I thought about it for all of about 5 seconds. And I said, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to stick with the pick because I believe, and I thought the game was going to be different, all right, in terms of, I thought it would be high scoring, but not like that, not 48-40.
Did you really think it was going to be high scoring?
Yeah, I think I said 27-24, which to me, that's more of a high scoring game.
Okay.
And I thought Peyton Barber would have 100 yards. I thought he was going to be the pick to flick, so I'm not going to sit there and take all the credit. I did not see 4 touchdowns from Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I didn't see this Buccaneer defense playing as bad as it did either. On the flip side, we'll get into that in a minute.
That's true, yep.
But yeah, I did see this coming. Dirk Koetter now, Trevor, 3-0 in season openers as a head coach.
Is he really?
Yes, he is. They had a similar win to this in his first ever game in 2016 as a head coach. And they went up to Atlanta and beat the Falcons. And then last year, of course, it was week 2, but it was still the Bucs season opener after Hurricane Irma.
They
trounced the Chicago Bears. Right? So the problem for Koetter in this offense, and we'll get into this a little bit later.
Hold on. Before you get into that, you know it was funny that I found a stat that Carl Nassib has had a sack in every single season opening game, and he should have had one. Yeah. He should have had one on Sunday, but Breeze escaped it. So when he missed that sack, I was in the press box. I gave out a little chuckle because it's some kind of Carl Nassib thing where he gets a sack every. I mean, the guy's got 5.5 sacks. Most of them were just effort sacks over the last 2 years.
On opening day.
Opening day is the day that he shines. So that was funny. But keep going.
The problem for Dirk Koetter and this Buccaneer team is they're 3-0 in the first game, and so far they're 0-2 in the second game. And not just 0-2, Trevor, but this second game, historically, over the last 2 years, have been of beat down proportions. Remember the game out there in Arizona?
That was week 2?
Yes.
Yeah, that
where they
was
lost
bad.
Doug Martin.
Very bad.
Luke Stocker, Robert Ayers, and it got destroyed. I think 40-7 was the final.
Then obviously last year, Minnesota Vikings. That was the big exposure game.
So you have to excuse Dirk Koetter for saying yesterday at the press conference, you know what, I'm really not going to celebrate this win. I mean, great, I want the players to celebrate.
Yeah, he knows.
But yeah, I'm really worried about Philadelphia, who didn't look great on Thursday night in beating the Falcons, but that was a quality win. I think the Falcons are going to be a good team this year. How good, we'll have to see. But
Matt Ryan wasn't even that good, though.
I know he wasn't. How much of that was Matt Ryan? How much of that was the Philadelphia Eagles' defense? We'll find out on Sunday when they come to town and go up against Ryan Fitzpatrick. I'm not going to forecast Fitzpatrick having 5 touchdowns. I'm not going to forecast that.
Crazy.
But I will stick with my prediction and go with the Buccaneer win on Sunday.
It's weird for me to sit here and to think about everything that's gone on since that game, and especially looking on to the next week, because going into the season, I wrote about this in my cover 3. I was wrong. I was dead wrong about what happened in New Orleans, because I thought the only way the Buccaneers were going to win that game was if they won the turnover battle. Mm-hmm. And I thought that it was going to be an ugly game, and if they won the turnover battle, then they could have got out there with the victory.
Yeah.
Instead, they did win the turnover battle, but They literally beat the Saints and a Hall of Fame quarterback.
At their own game.
At their own game in their own house. Oh, my. I could not believe it. And, you know, part of the game. Well, actually, I'll get to the game plan in a second. I just want to stay on the outlook thought. You know, I didn't think that they were going to win in New Orleans. And I actually thought that the only game that they were going to have a chance in was actually going to be against Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I thought that if they were going to get one win out of Winston's suspension, it was going to come against Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And I thought that there was a chance that, you know, Bucks historically aren't great on Monday Night Football.
Right.
Steelers know what they're doing. They're an experienced team in the limelight. So I thought, oh, well, it's just Steelers are probably going to take that one. Now here I am looking at it. They beat their toughest test at their own game, like we just said.
In their own house, like you said.
The Eagles didn't look that good against the Falcons because the Falcons didn't look that good.
Yep.
And they kind of got away with a win there.
Sticking with the Eagles for a quick second.
Okay.
In 2003, the Buccaneers, because I think of stadium construction at Raymond James Stadium, or something happened where they didn't have their 2003 season opener at home. I think one of the very few times that's happened for a defending Super Bowl champion. So where did they start 2003? They started at Lincoln Field in Philadelphia, okay? After beating the Eagles in the NFC Championship game.
Shut down the vet. To quote Keyshawn Johnson.
Yep. Go to the Super Bowl, win it. Now Philadelphia's got the revenge game. They opened up Lincoln Field. Rocky Balboa, Sylvester Stallone was there in pregame.
Was he really?
Yes, getting the crowd all amped up. And I believe the Buccaneers went out and won 17-0. Joe Garavicious had a magical night with a crazy touchdown catch. And so the crazy thing about that particular game was you saw that week one effort and you said, oh my gosh, you could pencil this team in for a repeat. The Buccaneers dominated Philly again in their own house in a revenge game. But what was the final record that year for the Buccaneers? 7-9. They underachieved. And talking to several Buccaneer players, remember Lomas Brown, who was on that Super Bowl team, or maybe it was Roman Oben. I think it was Roman Oben who told me, the worst thing that could have happened for us was winning in week one like we did. Because we felt like, we got this. And that's the most dangerous words that a player can tell a coach. Coach, we got this. We're Super Bowl champs. We're 1-0. All right? We got this. And so I just wonder if Philadelphia doesn't come in a little overconfident here, and they shouldn't if they watch the Buccaneers game film.
Yeah, I think that'll probably be a...
It's probably an eye-opener for them, but I'm just saying, if I'm the Buccaneers, I'm certainly not scared of the defending Super Bowl champions coming in here the way they played against the Falcons in a way the way the Bucs played against the Saints.
Yeah, and I just kind of finishing what I was saying there, this is almost the Philly game is almost now like a toss-up. And Pittsburgh looked awful against Cleveland. Awful.
Yeah.
I mean, they tied them, but they should have lost.
Yes.
They should have lost that game.
Yeah.
And so now I'm over here sitting thinking, they're 1-0. If it could be anybody's game against Philadelphia because it's in Tampa Bay. Who knows? It's still early in the season, so Monken could still get the better of the coordinators in Philly. They might be a better team than the Steelers. This team, I'm honestly thinking in my head that there's a possibility that this team is 3-0 in Winston suspension.
It very well could be.
And that's crazy.
One of the things I'm writing about in this week's SRS Fab 5 is how over the last 2 years, the Buccaneers have won in week one, lost in week two, and have started 2-3 in both of those seasons. And they had to race like hell to try to finish and get in the playoffs in 2016, and they weren't able to do it despite a five-game winning streak to kind of get back over 500.
Right.
Last year, we saw this team start 2-3, and they could never recover. Winston got injured, and it just spiraled down from there. So in my opinion, they've got to avoid that 2-3 start. Okay, you've got to have some momentum and carry that throughout the season. You can't just lose at the beginning and then hope to play catch-up where you're looking at other teams and hoping that they lose and all that stuff down the stretch, right? Like, if you want to make the playoffs, you got to have a stranglehold on your opponents, and you have to, you know, to get on a roll, get on some momentum, and ride that all the way throughout. And right now, Trevor, you just said, if this team goes 3-0, guess what? They avoid that 2-3 start. They have some room for error.
Well, you hope they avoid it. Well, yeah, actually, never mind.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I think that's the key. And we'll have to see if they can avoid this week two pitfall that they've had over these last 2 years under Dirk Koetter.
That was a good segue. Let's talk about Dirk Koetter.
Yep.
Because I think that there's a lot of I think that there is a lot to talk about here. And I think that it starts 5 weeks ago when this team was going into their preseason week one matchup, and Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times reported right before the game, Todd Monken's calling plays.
Yep.
That Dirk Koetter was giving Todd Monken that opportunity in the preseason. Mm-hmm. And now he was asked right then and there, Does this mean that he's going to call plays during the regular season? Cutter said, no, I'm going to take it back during the regular season, but this is something, you know.
It's an opportunity for Todd.
It's an opportunity for Todd, obviously. And what does he do? He makes the absolute most of it. Todd Monken does. And
28 points, 387 yards per game.
So for the entire preseason, that first team unit looked as good as it's ever looked.
Yeah.
And now we go into week one. And of course, the questions the entire week leading up to camp is, or leading up to this game against New Orleans, was who's calling plays?
Yeah.
And there are a couple brave media members that had to ask that question a couple of times during this week, and it was asked to Todd Monken, it was asked to Dirk Cutter, and the answer was the same on all fronts. They weren't going to tell who was calling the plays, and then all of a sudden, Sunday in New Orleans, we find out who's calling the plays, and I told you this story right before we went on air, which was which was funny. So I'm in New Orleans, representing PeterReport.com, and you, Scott, and Mark, you guys were watching the game back here in Tampa, and so I'm up in the press box, and they have the game, the broadcast game, on TV in the press box, but there's no volume. Like, you can't hear anything that's going on.
That's not uncommon. That happens in every press
box. That's the thing. The TVs don't have volume on them.
Right.
So, you know, you had texted me right as the game started, and you said, hey, who's calling plays? And I'm like, I don't know. I can't tell who's calling plays. I'm all the way up in the press box, you know. Like, I can see Cutter with a play call sheet on him, but I don't know. I don't see him. I don't know if he's calling plays. I don't know what he's doing.
Right, and from the TV vantage point, you could see Cutter with that play sheet.
Right.
But they weren't on him when he would be calling plays in. It was just like a second here or there.
Yeah.
So you didn't
couldn't
know.
Tell. Yeah. And so all of a sudden, that first 3-and-1 play where Ryan Fitzpatrick comes up to the line and he does a QB sneak.
Yes.
And in my head, I go,
you and I both knew it.
The second I saw Ryan Fitzpatrick sneak that ball for a first down, I went, Monk is calling plays.
Yeah.
Monk has got to be calling plays.
Yep.
And I almost texted you right then and said, I'm pretty sure Monken's calling plays because of that QB sneak.
But what happened?
You had published the story that you had already pre-written about it, because Chris Myers, I believe, who was on the broadcast, said, well, that's a great call by Todd Monken, who is calling plays. And so you put that story up, and you tweeted it out, and I retweeted it and everything.
Within seconds of Myers saying that.
Right.
Yeah.
And I noticed all the other media members that were in the press box kind of were like, wait a second. Because we're all on Twitter during the game, so we all see the feed come up. And all the other media members were like, wait, how do they know that? What happened? And, you know, I was sitting next to Jenna, and I was sitting next to Ira, and they were both kind of like, how do they know this? Like, was this confirmed? Who confirmed this? Did the Buccaneers confirm this? How is this? And so I kind of got to watch them scramble a bit, thinking like, hey, how do they know that this happened? And then they eventually figured it out that it was said on the broadcast.
Right.
But that was a...
And you know what, though? Again, hats off to Dirk Cutter. You wrote about him positively and giving him credit for making that decision to go with Monken.
He deserves it.
And I did the same thing right after the game. He does deserve the credit for this. And I know that it's... Listen, all the coaches have egos. All of the NFL head coaches, even Tony Dungy, mild-mannered, humble Tony Dungy, has an ego. Mm-hmm. It's an ego business. Mm-hmm. But
I've heard some stories a couple of times where, you know, coordinators that were with Tony Dungy and things like that, and they were saying, hey, you got to move on from this guy. And Tony Dungy said, well, you're going to have to fire me if you want me to move on from him.
Yeah.
You know, there's Tony Dungy had an ego. People,
yeah, he did.
You know?
And that's okay, and that's fine. But I think that the beauty of this is Cutter was able to put that aside and say, I'm not dumb enough to not keep a good thing rolling. I'm not going to be the one that's going to rock the boat here. And maybe some of this is self-preservation, and we'll talk about that in a second. But but I think the biggest thing is he recognized what was best for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And this goes all the way back to after the 9-7 season when Cutter, on his, I think it was January 1st, press conference, his postseason press conference, he admitted that he was considering giving up play calling duties after the first year, because he didn't feel like he was doing enough with the team from a leadership standpoint.
As a head coach.
And maybe from a game management
standpoint.
First-time
head coach.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So kudos for him for doing this. And I even said this on Friday on J.P. Peterson's show on 620. I said, Todd Monken has to call plays. He has to.
Like, I said, I tweeted the same thing last week.
It's the only right answer. Buccaneer fans.
But I didn't think it was going to happen.
I wasn't sure it was going to happen.
Yeah.
I thought it was, because if it didn't, it would be stupid. And I don't think Cutter's a stupid guy. But even our Pewter Nation followers out there, our PewterReport.com visitors, 94% of the poll this week with, I think, over 2,000 votes said that Todd Monken should be calling plays.
And so you called it a risk there. So why is it a risk, right? The big risk involved and the reason why we have to give credit to Cutter for doing, you know, what seems like an obvious thing. Yeah. Monken was on a roll. You got to keep it going. But there's a reason why we're emphasizing it so much, and that is because when you are an offensive head coach, you are brought in to call plays.
That's right.
You are brought in to bring offense to the team. That's what you do as an offensive head coach.
They were 5-11 last year. Dirk Cutter's on the hot seat this year.
Yes.
And for reasons I mentioned in a previous Fab Five, the last two head coaches did not survive back-to-back losing seasons. Greg Schiano had two. Lovie Smith had two. By the way, who was the offensive coordinator under Lovie Smith's final year here in Tampa?
It was Dirk Cutter.
Okay. Who took over the defensive play calling duties to save his ass in 2015?
Oh, who, Mike Smith?
Lovie Smith.
Oh, Lovie Smith. Lovie Smith.
So, did it work out very well for Lovie?
Yeah.
No, it didn't. He went down with the ship, right?
Yeah.
Yep. And so, what did the Lasers and Jason Light say? Well, hey, we got one side of the ball working really well here. It's the offensive side. This Dirk Cutter guy. Look what he did with Jameis Winston.
Right.
Pro Bowler his rookie season.
Right.
Doug Martin, Pro Bowler, 1,400 yards rushing. He's the guy that we need to keep this offensive train rolling, right?
Yeah.
So, the jeopardy that Cutter is exposing himself to is really twofold. If he takes the play calling back in New Orleans from Todd Monken and they drop 13 points in the Saints and they lose in horrific fashion, then all of a sudden he gets the blame. He gets all of the criticism. Why'd you rock the boat?
Right.
Why did you let Todd continue the play
Pride
calls?
Over the team.
Exactly. Weren't you watching on Thursday nights and Friday nights, Cutter? Right? So that's one side of it. The other side of it, though, is what if this team goes 7-9, 8-8, but like in 2015, this is a top five offense. And Todd Monken, who actually has head coaching experience at Southern Miss, and Cutter's previous coaching experience was in the college ranks at Arizona State. What if all of a sudden Todd Monken now takes this offense to new heights?
Right.
He's a previous head coach. The players love him. And and Cutter's not doing enough to get this team over the hump.
And that's what I wrote in my cover three, is that this decision made Cutter vulnerable. And it in a big way. This is a big risk for him, because if you are a head coach and you're not calling plays and you're not basically Bill Belichick, then how valuable are you? No, I'm not saying you don't have value, but I'm just saying the question then has to be asked, because Cutter looks much more relaxed on the sideline. He looks much more engaging with his players since he doesn't have to call plays.
Right.
He looks like he's managing the game much better, much
I didn't
less
see
stressed.
Any questionable game management decisions.
Because he got all of his resources into being a head coach.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. If it works out well, it's perfect. Like, it's great. You know, like, the Patriots obviously have their coordinators call plays.
Yep.
Belichick is the head coach. He does
the strategy. He's a strategist.
The variable things, handles being the head coach of the team.
Yeah.
And if it works, we've seen it work out in this league where it's beautifully. But the margin for error is low. Because if you do start to lose games, if you do start to slip, if anything goes wrong with this decision, you are to blame.
Yep.
And that's why I said that in my cover three, and I wrote many more words to explain this, which you guys should go read, but it was a selfless, team-first, risky decision by Cutter. All of those things are true.
Yep.
And he deserves, he really does. And, you know, we saw him be, we've seen him be a little bit bullish with admitting who is calling plays, especially, you know, after the game and the post-game press conference. You guys all saw it. We don't got to hide anything from anybody. You know, Mike Evans was kind of, he was playing along with the game like, oh, who called plays? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, he was asked at the podium and Ryan was like, you know, the voices in the headset get a little fuzzy. So I'm not sure. You know, they were all playing the game of to kind of not really say who was calling plays, but
it might have been Cutter trolling the media a little bit.
Right. And, you know, man, you know, he can't.
Just telling his players, hey,
listen,
this is bucking your business.
Right.
Keep it indoors.
Right.
You know, they'll eventually find out, but don't help him.
Right. And so, you know, and that's, he can do, that's fine as a head coach. You know, he's poking on the media a little bit after getting poked quite a bit over the last 2 years for some of the struggles he's
had. And Dirk Cutter doesn't like the media.
But here's the thing. He deserves all the credit in the
world.
That's
right, he
does.
Absolutely.
And if this team succeeds because of it, it's because of him. And I said this in my cover three, too. Calling plays is probably fun for him.
Of course it is.
Like,
of course.
This is why he does the job.
Yes.
And he had to look at something that he really enjoys and say, I don't get to do this anymore.
Not even that.
I'm not the best one at it.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. He took it a step further and said, maybe I shouldn't do this. You know what, actually, Todd? You're better. And as a man, as a prideful man, you got pride, Trevor. I got pride.
Yeah,
that's just part of it, right?
It's tough to do. And so far, it was the right decision.
Absolutely.
So, Cutter, obviously, it was a great decision that he had. I don't know if he's going to be able to get some rest and relaxation, but if he does, he should probably go out on the open water.
Well, he should. And if he's going to make the right decisions, he's going to make this one. And that's going to T.A. Mahoney Co. for the Marine Yard Sale. That's right. T.A. Mahoney has got a Marine Yard Sale coming up on the 15th of this month. That's this weekend, Saturday.
Right? Yep.
Saturday. And that's at 4990 Adamo Drive in Tampa. Starts at 8 a.m. They're going to have new and used rods, reels, boats, tackle, coolers, fishing apparel, tackle boxes. So anything under the sun, anything that has to do with the word marine, you can find at T.A. Mahoney. And there's not a better day to go there, Trevor, than this Saturday at 8 a.m. for the Marine Yard Sale. New and used rods, reels, boats, tackle, coolers, fishing apparel, and tackle boxes. Find it all at T.A. Mahoney's. It's your one-stop shop for all of your boating and marine needs. And what better day to go than right before the Bucks' home opener against the Eagles this Saturday. You can check out T.A. Mahoney's website, tamahoneyco.com, or just go there on Saturday, 4990 Adamo Drive in Tampa.
Dirk Cutter's going to be there. All right, maybe not.
Maybe not.
Maybe not. Maybe not. But
I'm not going to rule it out.
You know, he might. I mean,
he might keep making smart decisions and just show up.
Listen, it would be a smart decision to go to T.A. Mahoney's at any time.
Listen, speaking about announcements here, we have some other things to talk about, and not really advertiser-related, although I'll get into my awesome weekend on MyBookie.ag.
Oh, yeah, you
got to
brag about that.
I do have to brag about that.
Jeez,
listen, we have a lot of fun things coming up on PeterReport.com this year. You've already seen some of our new features. Ian Beckles, former Tampa Bay, well, I should say current Tampa Bay radio personality. He's got a show on 102.5 The Bone on Sundays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Former guard with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's been on our podcast during training camp. He's got a new column called In the Trenches, which comes out every Monday night following the Bucs game. Now, that column will come out Tuesday night after the Bucs-Steelers game, but otherwise it's going to be Monday nights. So he talked about the looming Fitzpatrick Jameis Winston decision that's going to have to be made in week 4 when the Bucks travel to the Chicago Bears. We'll talk about that in a second.
Ian, I love Ian, man. He tells it like it is.
He does.
I'm on his podcast all the time, yep. And then, you know, him and I go back and forth, and I'm glad that we're giving him that platform because he's got a good voice.
He does. So definitely check that out. That's going to be every Monday night except for the Monday Night Football game coming up. That'll be on Tuesday night, In the Trenches with Ian Beckles. Our newest contributor, our newest writer, Andrew Scavelli, the latest Peter reporter to join the team, has got tons of new features. He has got his fantasy football rankings, which come out on Fridays. So you want to check those out if you fantasy football fans. He highlights the Buccaneer players, but also covers the league-wide, all of the top players in fantasy. The PR NFL power rankings also come out, I believe, on Tuesdays, so that'll come out later today.
What were the weren't the Bucks ranked like
21? I think in his opening,
he had them that high.
I think so.
God, what a homer!
Yeah,
God, what a homer!
I gotta think they're going to be ranked higher than 21 this week, though. We'll have to wait and see if they crack the top 15 or so. But Scavelli has done a great job with those two columns, the power rankings for the NFL, and then the fantasy football rankings that come out on Fridays. He also has got a new segment. We often appear on News Channel 8, WFLA, for the Bucks Bonus Program. You were on there Sunday live after the game in New Orleans on the Bucks Bonus Show. We also do those features with Gabrielle Shirley and Dan Lucas and Annie Sabo during the week from One Buccaneer Place that can be found on our website and on WFLA.com. But Scavelli is also going to be doing a fantasy segment during the 11 o'clock news. Highlighting fantasy football talk, so be sure to check that out on News Channel 8 as well. And then also follow us on Instagram. Mark are doing a great job contributing stuff there, so there's a lot of new content coming.
And follow Bucks Football and Bucks Wave. They're our Instagram partners. They do an awesome job.
Definitely. And then the last thing I'll mention here before we get to my earnings this weekend, Hard Rock, Seminole Hard Rock in Tampa, the $500,000 Pro Pick'em Challenge is live.
Ooh.
Every single week, you have a chance to go there and register. It's a free game to play, absolutely Ooh. Free. And you have a chance to win $25,000 in weekly prizes, or I think $500,000 is the big prize at the end. So make sure you go to Seminole Hard Rock Tampa, tell them PeterReport.com sent you, and go try to have a chance to win some money on your football knowledge, not just your poker skills or your video slot skills. You can actually use your football knowledge and go there and try to win some money in their weekly pro pick'em game. Speaking of winnings, Trevor,
yeah, get to it.
Listen, Buck fans, if you want to put your money where your mouth is, and I did just that.
He did. Yeah, he did, and I got to give it to him.
I'm not a big bettor. Some of you are going to like fall out of your chairs laughing. If you're driving, please slow down. Don't crash your car. I bet $20 on the Bucks this week. I bet $20.
Just straight up or what? Or did you take the 10 points?
I took $5 on the points.
And okay.
I bet the money line. Okay, on the rest of it, the other $15.
Okay.
And I won $78.
Coward.
On my $20. Okay. So, now, and I did this.
Where'd you do it?
I did it on mybookie.ag.
There it is.
That's right.
There it is. There it is.
Mybookie.ag. So, if you want to put your money where your mouth is and make some money, and I also did very well on Saturday, Trevor. You know, I cleaned up during college football.
Oh, did you? Who'd you bet on? I didn't know who you bet on Saturday.
I bet on Mississippi State.
Did you bet on Kansas State? Oh, look at
Mississippi State.
The reverse bet.
Absolutely.
The reverse bet.
I knew they were going to win. And you know what? I've already bet $30 this week in college football. I am taking UTSA, University of Texas San Antonio, and the points, the 21 points, over my Kansas State Wildcats this week.
Man.
Kansas State has two offensive touchdowns in two games, Trevor. You think they're going to outscore San Antonio by 21 points? I don't think so.
Probably not.
Yep. So,
probably not.
But listen, whether it's college football, whether it's the NFL, whether it's baseball, mybookie.ag is the place to go. And the best part about it is if you mention the promo code Pewter, P-E-W-T-E-R, they're going to double your initial deposit. I understood that there was, for a day or two, some snafus with that promo code.
Wow, what a word.
But it is now working. So go to mybookie.ag, deposit your money, mention Pewter, and up to $1,000, they're going to double your money. So if you put in $100, boom, you got $200 to play with. If you're going to put in $500, they're going to give you $1,000. So mybookie.ag, they're the best in the business, the fastest payouts. They got prop bets, in-game bets, and everything from point spread to straight-up bets. You name it, mybookie.ag is the place to go.
All right, we got enough time for about one more topic, and I'll save the negatives of what was kind of a less than stellar Bucks defense or performance.
The defense.
We can talk about that because we got another podcast coming later this week, and we'll talk about it there as we preview that Eagles game. But I wanted to talk about Todd Monken. I wanted to dive into the play calling and to what he did well. And man, you know, I wrote my film portion of my cover three on some of the things that I noticed that he did really well. Mm-hmm. And you know, I do think that it is funny when we hear head coach Dirk Cutter, I don't know if it's backpedal a little bit, but you know, instead of like saying Monken's name necessarily, he talks about, oh, it was the Buccaneer game plan. It was a collective game plan. And
he did mention Monken yesterday.
Yeah, it was. I'm not saying it wasn't, but the things that they did, and I'll tell you this too, having a guy who calls plays, calling them up in the box, mm-hmm. I think is a big deal, more on offense than on defense.
Agreed.
Because on defense,
totally agree.
On defense, you can kind of get a feel for more of like the attitude of your players, mm-hmm. and that's really big on defense. But when you call plays from the press box instead of from field level, you can see everything that you need to see. And there were two separate drives. It was funny that both of them ended in DeSean Jackson long touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Where you saw them call plays and build up to attacking the defense exactly the way they needed to.
Mm-hmm.
In the first long touchdown to DeSean Jackson, the Saints they came out of the game, it was very start of the game, they came out really aggressive. They came out in press coverage, cover one.
Single
the
high
strong,
safety.
The strong safety was helping out with the linebackers. There was only one deep safety, and they were basically like, we're not afraid of Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Right.
That was basically what they were saying.
Yep.
And first play, they had a quick pass right out the gate on first down, which I loved.
To DeSean Jackson.
And it was to DeSean Jackson right to the sideline. They ran the ball after that. They had the QB sneak after that. And I think they ran one more play after that where that was, I think, three or four plays in a row where the Saints, no matter, now it was no matter what the Buccaneers ran, mm-hmm. whether it was spread out, whether it was a run formation, whether what have you, they were in single high.
Yeah.
And then that fourth play, they manipulated the crap out of it, and yeah. it was a wide open touchdown.
Where was DeSean Jackson lined up on that play?
Which one?
On the first touchdown.
Oh, in the slot, my friend.
In the slot.
In the
something
slot.
You and I have talked about. Something. Dating back to training camp.
Something that I have written for quite yes. a while now. And yep. it was good to see because there's all kinds of disguise there.
Right.
DeSean Jackson is too fast. And I say part of what made that play, that first touchdown play, so great was the fact that when you play from the slot against, you know, linebackers are basically playing zone defense. So right. the linebackers are playing zone and the safeties are playing zone behind him.
Yep.
When you've got DeSean Jackson in the slot, the beginning portion of his route is I'll say masked mm-hmm. in the linebacker's zone.
Right.
So the deep safety, especially when you only have one deep safety, yep. he's instead looking over at Mike Evans on the sideline. You know,
right.
because he's probably the
he's
main
the bigger
target.
Threat. Yeah.
Right. And so on that play, it was so beautiful. And I'm sure that Todd Monken got in Fitzpatrick's headset before the play and said, "You stare at Mike for the first 2 seconds, and DeSean's going to be wide open."
Yep.
And that's what he did. He hiked the ball. Ryan Fitzpatrick did. It was play action. He immediately looked to Evans.
Mm-hmm.
The safety was keyed in on Evans
rolled
because he was
way.
Watching
Took
the quarterback's eyes.
Yep.
And then by the time DeSean Jackson was going in his route, he was coming out of that linebacker level. It was mm-hmm. almost out of like it was right out of clutter, and the yep. safety was too late.
Yeah.
And the entire design of that play, when they called it, the mm-hmm. type of defense they called it against, is perfect.
The thing about using DeSean Jackson in the slot is it's a double-edged sword that really favors the Buccaneers, I think, in both instances. The first is, if you give one of the fastest wide receivers a free release and you're not deep enough, or in this instance, you're playing zone and you're passing them off, essentially, to the free safety,
yeah,
okay?
Right.
You're giving DeSean Jackson a free run at something he does exceptionally well, which is run fast.
right.
And then, right. But then the second thing is, if you come up and press him in the slot, which the Saints didn't do, okay, if you don't jam him and literally stop him and literally prevent him from getting into the route, in other words, if you come up and just try to chip him and he gets by you, there's no way you're going to recover.
You can't recover
right. from that.
Right.
So you're
that's
kinda,
why nobody presses DeSean.
That's right. Now, I will admit, Dirk Cutter had a very revealing moment in the postgame press conference. He said, "We actually ran that play last year against the Saints. We just had Adam Humphries in that role. So we just decided, hey, let's put the fast guy in the slot."
Imagine
that. Touchdown.
Imagine. And then, yeah, so then building off of that, the second play, the second big touchdown to DeSean Jackson, the Saints were kind of fed up getting passed all over in single yep. high coverage, and they actually changed back to quarters, so they went to a two-deep look.
Yep.
There were two safeties, and you can see the moments that Todd Monken realizes it, and it's mm-hmm. almost immediately. They ran two deep safety for one of the first times in the game, and all it took were two more plays after that for them to take the perfect shot. They
yep.
called a Mills concept, which is you've got, say, like, let's try to build this visual for you guys. Two wide receivers, say, to the right side. One of them is running an in route, about a 10-yard in route, and then the other one is running a post above him.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're running against a two-deep look, you're forcing one safety to collapse on the guy going over the middle, which is Humphries.
Yep.
And then normally that means the person on the outside running the post route doesn't have a safety to help.
Right.
So he's just burning his corner.
Yep.
So it was just there were so many instances in that game where, I mean, I don't want to take, don't get me wrong, I'm not taking anything away from Ryan Fitzpatrick
right.
because at the end of the day, that dude.
But he was put in position to win.
He was unbelievably accurate.
Yes. All he had to do was get the ball there because he was put in position with the game planning to win.
Yeah.
And I want to give a shout out to George Warhop, okay? We've talked a lot about Todd Monken. We've talked
a lot
about Dirk Cutter, but George Warhop, zero sacks. On that second play, and Brandon Thorne, who we follow on Twitter, I reposted his video of them showing this.
Mm-hmm.
The right side of the offensive line were doubling up on the Saints' left side of the defensive line. And the right defensive end, I'm not sure who it was, had a one-on-one with Donovan Smith. Donovan Smith handled him with ease. Donovan Smith had a fantastic game mm-hmm. from a protection standpoint.
Right.
Playing on a bad knee. I'm not saying that was Donovan's best game, but Donovan Smith is not 100%.
Right.
And for him to play the way he did and not allow, I don't even think he had a pressure or a hit on Fitzpatrick was great. But on that play, the second touchdown to DeSean Jackson, Sheldon Rankins actually kind of ragdolls Ali Marpet a little bit, which doesn't happen very often. But he actually went to the outside and then took a step inside and threw Marpet off balance and really had a clear shot up the A-gap right at Ryan Fitzpatrick. And you know who stepped in? Peyton Barber and stoned Sheldon Rankins right there in the spot. Yep. Allowed Marpet to recover for a quick second, re-anchor, and then get a double team on Rankins. And Fitzpatrick stepped up and made the throw. So there's a reason why Ronald Jones was inactive. Yes, they needed some help in the secondary, but he is nowhere near being able to contribute to the way
in that way
that Peyton Barber and the Jacquizz Rodgers do and have the trust of the coaching staff. It's not just about running the ball. It's not just about catching.
Yeah.
It's about pass protection. And Peyton Barber and Jacquizz Rodgers are light years ahead right now of Ronald Jones.
This year, this entire season feels very much like a we're going to do what we need to do.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you know, whether it's been playing Chris Godwin over DeSean Jackson, mm-hmm. or playing DeSean Jackson in the slot, or using Vernon Hargraves in press coverage, or starting Peyton Barber over your second round pick, or even making him inactive, or having DeSean Jackson out there for the first punt return, like DeSean was out there.
That's right.
Or using Sean Wilson as a dynamic kick return option, whatever it has been. I've noticed that this year, more than really over the last, since Dirk Koetter has been here, they are committed to doing whatever is best for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and to get that victory week in and week out, I think, than I've ever seen.
Well said.
And you cannot stress this enough. Like, Todd Monken went into that game plan and his foot was on the gas.
Yeah.
The whole time.
He never took it off. It was aggressive all four quarters.
I say this in my cover three, and I think Todd Monken knew who was on the other sideline.
Yeah.
It's Drew Brees and Sean Payton.
Right.
And Todd Monken didn't. I bet Todd Monken went into that game just thinking himself, if I don't score 35, we lose.
That's right.
And it like I don't even mean that in like Todd Monken saying offense to Mike Smith or anything like
that's
that.
Right.
I just think that Todd Monken, because that entire game, whether they had the lead or not, Todd Monken went, if we don't score 35, 40 points,
that's
we
right.
lose. And I'm going to score 33, 40 points. It doesn't matter if we're up
17 points. They were up 17 points at one time.
Right. And like, it didn't matter whether there was only a couple possessions left in the second quarter, or, you know, it was that lull time between the third and the fourth quarter. No, they were taking shots. Yeah. They were going for points. Yeah. They were going for points every single time.
We saw that amazing catch and run, and it's a shame that it didn't stand because of Donovan Smith's penalty. But but that amazing play by Adam Humphries, they went for it, exactly.
Was there a minute left?
Yeah.
Yep. And they went for it.
Right. Now, when you get the penalty and you're backed up inside your own 20, like that's where you got to play smart football.
Right.
We're from a time standpoint, from a distance standpoint, we're probably not going to get the field goal. We have the lead on the road. We're getting the ball to start the second half. Let's just call it a half and do that. But, yes, tremendous job by Todd Monken, Dirk Koetter, George Warhop, the entire offensive side of the ball. We'll talk about the defense later this week. Because I'm sure that when we hit open locker room on Wednesday, which is tomorrow, that we're going to be hearing from those defensive players that know that they're going to have to play a heck of a lot better. And I think that as great of a job as Nick Foles did in the Super Bowl, he is not the same caliber of quarterback that Drew Brees is. Doesn't mean he can't beat these Buccaneers.
Right.
But from an offensive standpoint, the Saints were and are a juggernaut. They're going to put up 30-plus points on a lot of teams this year.
Right.
Okay, that's just Sean Payton, Drew Brees, Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara. That's who they are. They're going to do that to a lot of teams. So, the defense has to improve. No crap, right? Like, we got that.
Right.
But I will say this, though. If Mike Smith might need to pick me up, you know, after that game. I'm sure he's happy that they won. He knows where the areas are. But if I'm Mike Smith and it's Tuesday and I'm game planning with my staff, I'm saying, you know what, maybe a little change of scenery would do us some good. Maybe we take our game planning to Ford's Garage.
That could be an option.
Have some beer.
Ford's Garage, they've got a lot of
have
choices.
Have some burgers.
You know?
Yeah.
He can really take his mind off of it. He can enjoy
a
local beer, some of the best burgers I've ever had. You know, just really clear his mind to take on the Philadelphia Eagles.
Because what happened last week?
He didn't go to Ford's Garage.
He didn't go to Ford's Garage.
He didn't.
They were hunkered up at one Buccaneer place in that same film room.
These are facts only.
Right?
This is a facts only
podcast. Did the defense play last year very well, Trevor?
They didn't.
They did not. I say shake it up.
Got to go to Ford's Garage.
Defensive coaching staff, go to Ford's Garage, get a beer, get a burger, loosen up.
What's your favorite thing to get at Ford's Garage?
I really, listen, I love the burgers, right? I'm more of like a traditional kind of guy where I'll get like a bacon burger, right?
Okay, all right.
I did try the bison burger. It's phenomenal. But the one thing
I got to try that.
Yeah, it's really good. The one thing that I do like there that I have a hard time finding elsewhere is their pulled pork mac and cheese.
You get that every time.
I like it.
It's good.
It's not exactly a diet option. I probably don't need it, but you know what? I like to indulge when I get a Ford's Garage. And whether it's a Corona Light, whether it is a local beer, like I like the Duke's Cold Nose Brown Ale from up in Jacksonville. They have that regularly there. I go to the Wesley Chapel one. Trevor, they've got one in West Chase. They've got one in St. Petersburg. They've got one in Brandon. Matter of fact, you and I had our first interview when you were thinking about becoming a pewter reporter.
We did.
At the Ford's Garage in Brandon. So we it's did. Got a lot we of history did. With us. So.
Yep, yep. Now, I've been thinking about this, and I think my favorite thing there is their nachos.
Yeah.
Because pulled it's just are good. So much. If it you is. Can, all right, here you go, guys. If you go to Ford's Garage and order their nachos and can eat all of it, take a picture of it before and after.
Yes.
And I will give you a retweet on the Pewter Report Twitter account.
Yes.
If you order the nachos at Ford's Garage and
by yourself
right,
now.
Right.
Don't
this
sit
is
there
a
and come
for
your friends.
And don't cheat for the retweet. You
exactly.
Know? Come on.
I like
we're
it.
About morals here. But if you could do that, I'll give you a retweet. So, yeah, Ford's Garage.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're going to wrap up this edition of the Pewter Nation podcast with this. Pewter Report TV, we had Trevor Sikkema's The Score, which is his show. It's on Mondays.
Yes, yes.
Mine debuts tomorrow, Reynolds on the Record. That'll be my summary of what the Buccaneers are at midweek on Wednesdays. And then Mark Cook, I think his show is called What's Cooking? That's original, right?
He better wear an apron.
He probably should. He should like wear one of those big like chef hats.
Yeah, that's what I'm
in
saying.
In an apron,
you know?
Yes. Yeah. What's cooking with Mark Cook? You know, something like that.
My John Ryan voice.
Yeah, a little bit. But no, it was a great win for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I have some trepidations about whether this team can overcome the week two bugaboo that has plagued the last 2 years under Dirk Cutter. But I'm going out on a limb. Sticking with my predictions and saying this team will be 2-0 come Sunday at 4 o'clock.
We shall see. I'm not ready to give my prediction yet, but there is going to be a lot that's going to be going on around One Buck Place this week. So make sure you guys are following PewterReport.com. Obviously the website, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that kinds of stuff. And so we will have another. I know this is a late podcast this week, but we're going to have another one for you Thursday, Friday, something around there. And so we'll be sure to get another podcast for you as we head into the week against the Philadelphia Eagles. So until then, this has been another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast.
Out.